You've often heard me say that Field Notes topics frequently reflect any particular topic that might be on my mind at a given moment. Some of those topics are seasonal, such as snowshoeing in the winter or pike fishing in the summer. Some are timely because of an impending activity for my job, such as archery or rafting safety. Most of them are fairly tame or dwell on something pleasant. Not always, but certainly the vast majority of the time. Well, not today. Today I have something crappy to discuss. In fact, there is very much an intended pun to what I just said. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I'm not sure there's actually a good choice of a term to go with for today's episode, so I may vacillate just a bit. For now, let's go with poop. Yeah, you heard me correctly. It's something all of us do, some more than others, but it's probably not often that it's a topic of serious conversation. Today, that is my intent. Bear with me. There is a reason for it. Poop, or feces, or solid waste if you prefer, is actually something like 75% water. According to the University of Massachusetts, the remaining parts are a mixture of dead bacteria that help us to digest whatever we ate, still living bacteria, some proteins, indigestible fiber, and waste materials. Exactly how often we relieve ourselves of solid waste is very much an individual thing. The average individual poops about once a day, and there is, on average, 1 ounce per 12 pounds of body weight, meaning that a 190-pound person accounts for about 1 pound per day, if that person is anything like average. Once a day is average, but the norm is actually a much wider range that can be anything like 3 or 4 times a day to 3 times a week, according to Live Science. My guess is pretty much everyone hearing this episode, if you haven't already turned it off, falls somewhere within that range. Let's add one more number to all that. As of March of this year, it was estimated that the world population sits at something like 7.4 billion, an all-time high. Do you see where I'm headed with this? People doing what people do is all well and good when you're able to conveniently not think about it because you have your septic or a city sewer system to deal with it. But a strong thrust of this show is, wait for it, to get outside and do stuff. And a lot of us do just that, for time intervals well in excess of more than a couple of hours. Which leads to an issue that needs to be dealt with, and dealt with adequately. Or, put another way, we need to be doing the right thing when we answer the call of nature, while we're out actually enjoying Mother Nature. Across rural Alaska, it's probably not as big a deal as it is in more populated areas. To support that, I would like to share something I found on an online article about this very topic. According to Mike Smith, a planner for the U.S. Forest Service based in San Isabel National Forest in Colorado, backcountry waste disposal is a problem many land managers share. A host of reasons converge to create this problem, including high trail usage, hikers' improper disposal methods, no mandatory pack-it-out requirements, more on that idea in a moment, and a lack of funds to provide the education, oversight, and supplies to address the issue. Smith said that the trails in San Isabel can see as many as 100 people per day in the summer. That's every day, many of whom spend a night or two, and he said signs of that heavy use are apparent. Walk 50 feet from any campsite and you're going to find little white toilet paper muffins scattered about. There's only so many rocks and trees. If you're thinking, wow, that's gross, well, me too. Some parks and recreation areas do mandate that you pack out your human waste, which is one way to deal with it. Those that have implemented such rules have seen success. One such place is Shasta Trinity National Forest in California, which made it mandatory in 1997. Eric White, the lead climbing ranger on Mounts Shasta at the park, said, "We average about 2.5 tons of human waste that's carried out by the climbers themselves." I share that quote to illustrate two things. First, packing it out can be a successful strategy. And second, in places that have a high level of use, this is a problem to be reckoned with. Don't panic. I'm not on the verge of suggesting that everyone out there hearing this needs to pack it out if you need to go while you're outdoors doing things. Though if you want to do that, I wouldn't discourage it either. Rather, I'd like to encourage folks to at least consider a few things that they can do, if not already being done, that can minimize impact. No, we're not a lower 48 national park. The volume impact is smaller, though I would argue that we get out a whole lot more, so there is some small level of trade-off there. As mentioned, I frequently write about what's on my mind at any given time. Today's topic might make you wonder about the state of that mind. Briefly, here's why it's been something I've thought about. It's an issue I have to deal with the two summer camps that I do for my job. Cape Pierce isn't as big a deal, because we have an outhouse out there. The float camp, though, requires walking kids through what I want them to do. More on that in a moment. Also, I have camps of my own coming up, which requires I plan for that specific aspect of the trip. And finally, perhaps more importantly, there was an American Heritage Girls camping trip that I went on at the start of summer that I have previously referenced. I got to camp a day later than the girls and other adult leaders. A poop hole had been dug. Unfortunately, it not only had what it was intended for, but foil and plastic wrappers of various sorts relating to personal hygiene and cleanliness. Not cool at all. Our troop has received instructions on what's acceptable and what's not, and still got it wrong. As such, I'm thinking it is, at the least, a good reminder for folks to hear, especially with the hunting seasons coming up. Let's assume, for a moment, you're camping, need to go, and do not have access to any sort of facilities, such as a bathroom or outhouse. The best solution? Bury it. The term you'll hear is cat hole, so named because cats like to bury their poop. Cat holing has advantages. Most areas are pretty easy to dig in, holes are easy to disguise when done, and there is nothing left above the ground to gross people out, like those white muffins mentioned by that park ranger. As with anything, there's a proper way to do it. Cat holes ideally should be located at least 200 feet from water, trails, and campsites. That amounts to about 70 average adult steps if you're not carrying a tape measure or rangefinder with you. Dig a hole 6 to 8 inches deep and 4 to 6 inches in diameter, if it's a one-time thing. The cat hole should be covered and disguised with natural materials when finished. I personally like to use a folding shovel to cut the top sod layer and set it aside, like a lid, which then goes back over the hole when I'm done. If camping in the area for more than one night, or if camping with a large group, you might consider not overusing a single site. Some other things to consider are to locate it out of sight and in an area with organic soil to aid in decomposition. Exposure to sunlight will also help this. Try to keep it away from water sources where it can eventually leach into them. Afterwards, fill it in and blend it a bit. If you know you're going to be digging a cat hole, it pays to have an implement to dig one with. For single-use holes, maybe it's as simple as carrying a small garden trowel, and they do make heavy-gauge models specifically for this job. In fact, some camping supply companies sell trowels with folding handles designed to take up very little space in backpacks. I favor something a bit more substantial and have mostly carried an old military-style folding shovel, though I'm eyeing up a short-shafted non-folding one for the coming hunting seasons. The upside is easier digging, particularly if I need a larger hole. The downside is size. No matter which way you go on this, you should be able to come up with something workable for under $20. Larger holes, such as what we'll use on our EE float trip, would more properly be called latrines, not cat holes. The same ideas apply as far as soil types and distance from water. Because of the larger concentration of feces, location is even more important. Also, a light covering of soil after each use can help speed up the decomposition process. Something to keep in mind if this describes your situation. My issue with the American Heritage Girls latrine was that it contained things other than toilet paper. Don't put anything other than toilet paper into the hole, and some folks make it a point to pack out their paper. The choice is yours. But avoid non-paper items going into the hole. Make sure the paper is either buried completely or packed out. There are specific toilet papers designed to degrade faster, but as long as you stick with plain white, non-perfumed types, you should be good to go. Perhaps this was an oddball topic, and maybe it's something you don't sit around discussing with your friends. Honestly, I don't either, despite what you might think after today's episode. It is something to consider as you're out and about, however. Look, maybe you're already doing all of this already, and conscientiously at that. Maybe you're not. If you're not, well, that's why I'm talking about it today. To paraphrase that old ditty, yes, crap happens, just deal with it properly. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.